Had we at the time begun to collaborate fully with the Russians on Eurasian development,
Go ahead, Mr. Walsh.
Go ahead. I'm not stopping you.
Yeah, so first of all, you know, the Greece thing has nothing to do with this. And to call it genocidal, my God, that is a completely inappropriate use of that term. I mean, read a law book. That is just wrong. But let's deal with the facts here. You know, Russia invaded Ukraine. Ukraine is a sovereign state. It's in the United Nations. Russia invaded it. I mean, I think I have problems with NATO expansion. I was a critic of NATO expansion in the 1990s. I have lots of blame that can be cast here about this, but we're kidding ourselves if we don't think this starts with the Russian invasion, a use of force against a sovereign state. You know, and not to mention shooting down a civilian airliner. You know, whatever happened about that? So, you know, I don't know why we're talking about Greek debt right now. The main issue is Ukraine and whether there's some sort of, you know, solution here. And I think that there is. I think, you know, the Russians and the rebels are not going to go to Kiev. That is not sustainable. And but they can cause lots of mischief. They can hold on to the rebel provinces, and that's going to cause problems for Ukraine. So eventually, there's going to have to be a compromise. And you know, whether this looks like Georgia from 2008 or whatever, but it's not. I don't expect the Russians to go to Kiev, and I don't expect the Ukrainians to be able to push back against all the rebels in the territory they've already taken. So. There's going to have to be some sort of accommodation, because if this continues, it's not going to hurt the U.S. The U.S. is having economic growth. We have GDP growth. It's going to hurt the Russians, which it has, as the rubles dropped, and it's going to hurt the Ukrainians. Those are the two parties that suffer most when this continues.
All right, let's talk about the Russians. Mr. Billington, how much of this is directly because of Russia? Because let's not forget, even in the previous Minsk agreement in September, Russia continued to iterate that it is not a party to the conflict in eastern Ukraine.
Well, they clearly are supporting the Russian-speaking faction in eastern Ukraine. They're not sending troops in. They admit that there are people from the military, former military, who have gone in to fight with the rebels, but they're not sending troops there's no invasion, this kind of insanity, declaring an invasion. But they are in a situation in which the attempt to impose this kind of, keep in mind that the coup against the elected government, the democratic elected government of Ukraine, run by Victoria Nuland, who was caught talking about how she wanted to put Yats in power, Yatsenyuk, this fanatic, who is a supporter of the neo-Nazi groups which spearheaded the Maidan revolt, the supporters of Stepan Bandera, Hitler's ally in Ukraine, who still carry their Nazi symbols, who burned people alive in Odessa, who are unfortunately now making up most of the so-called Kiev militia, who are doing much of the fighting in the east. Mr. LaRouche said recently that this move for an agreement is extremely important, but if they cannot clean out this neo-Nazi network from the right sector and so forth, who are manning these militia groups and who will not pay any attention to any agreement, even from Kiev, even from Poroshenko, who probably is relatively honest in his effort to bring about some sort of a solution. I agree with Walsh that the situation is in a deadlock. There's no interest by the people in the East to take over the rest of Ukraine. The Russians have no interest in a divided Ukraine, which would be permanent warfare. They need some sort of recognition of autonomy. They need some sort of recognition of the rights of that faction of the Ukraine population. But they, in fact, want a united Ukraine, and they want it to be under a government which is not allowing these neo-Nazi forces to run havoc throughout the country.
All right, Mr. Walsh, I know you have a response, but gentlemen, hold on to your thoughts. We're going to cross over to our social media pages and see what our viewers are saying about this.
Not likely to last, the Yanks aren't on board. Enough bloodshed, I hope things will work out well in Ukraine. If the US dictatorship stops shipping arms to Syria and Ukraine, the conflicts will halt at once. This is a temporary ceasefire agreement. The world warmongers have already planned to destroy Russia. Kiev will break the ceasefire. They're just rearing and resupplying. Watch.
All right, those were some of the comments that have been posted by our viewers as they continue this conversation on our social media networking sites. Now, Mr. Walsh, looking at the comments and also your comments as well as Mr. Billington's, it is what concerns me the most is this perception of facts. Both sides have a different perception of what the facts are on the ground, be it Russia, be it Ukraine, be it the U.S. or NATO, so to speak. Now, for example, Ukraine insists that the point that foreign forces must leave Ukraine in the agreement points to Russia, whereas Russia sees it as directed against the mercenaries that Kiev has deployed against the eastern population. Isn't this a problem, though, when it comes to finding out who has adhered to the principles of this agreement or not?
Well, I would separate two different issues. One is enforcement of a ceasefire. I think that's going to be left to the OSCE, they're a neutral body. If the parties allow them to do the monitoring, which sometimes they have and sometimes they haven't, then I think the OSCE can do their job and monitor whether one side's violating another. I think this is less, I mean, there's a lot of talking points and rhetoric here about Nazis and also Ukrainians selling their story to the media against the Russians. But I don't think that's what drives this. I think there are fundamental geopolitical interests that drive this. So on the Russian side, I think they don't want Ukraine to join NATO and the EU. I think if it wasn't for that, you know, they probably wouldn't be involved very much, although there is a certain political payoff that Putin has gotten at home domestically for this, but I think that's not going to last very long. So I think there's some fundamental interests on both sides that are more important than the perceptions. And so if we're going to get a long-lasting deal here where the parties get accommodated, it's going to have to speak to those interests, not so much the perceptions.
All right, Mr. Billington, is the Organization of Security and Cooperation in Europe a neutral player here?
Relatively, yeah. They've been quite honest about the fact that they've never seen any Russian tanks or hardware crossing the border, and that the West just continues lying about, you know, this invasion of Ukraine. But again, I think it's extremely important to recognize that the idea that this is just about Ukraine is ignoring the world we live in. I mean, the world is right now divided into two totally different paradigms. You have the general breakdown crisis in the West. The idea that the U.S. is in a recovery is a total fraud. They've just printed a few quadrillion dollars to bail out the banks, but the physical economy continues to deteriorate along with that of Europe. Whereas the BRICS countries, starting last summer, have unleashed one of the greatest productive booms in the history of mankind. They're building nuclear power plants around the world in Africa and South America. They're building high-speed rail. They're transforming the world, all except Europe and the U.S., with the idea of what used to be called the American system. Big investments in big projects, infrastructure, development, industry, agriculture. So there's two totally contradictory paradigms in the world. And our effort here is to bring the United States and Europe into agreement with the BRICS nations on great development. Now remember, Russia is part of the BRICS. The sanctions have done more damage to Europe than they have to Russia. The oil price has done tremendous damage to Russia, but the sanctions themselves have destroyed Europe, which is one of the reasons the Europeans are fed up with this attack on Russia. And Russia has simply established new relationships with China, with India, with South Africa, with Brazil, with Egypt, with Argentina.
Okay, we're quickly running
There's
out of time, Mr. Billington. I'm sorry to interrupt you again. However, you both gentlemen touched on the issue of NATO. Mr. Walsh, I'd like to get your opinion. Russia is apprehensive about NATO expansionism and further deployment eastward towards its west border. Do you think NATO will halt now?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Will NATO do what?
Do you think will NATO halt its expansion now?
Yeah, I don't see NATO going into Ukraine. I think this what does, though, is that Russia's behavior in Ukraine will spur balancing behavior. So, again, I was opposed to NATO expansion in the 90s, so, you know, I'm not a defender of it. But I think a natural consequence of Russian aggressiveness in Ukraine, well, you'll see the Baltic states and Poland press for greater, they are in NATO now, and they're going to press for greater support, because now everyone in that neighborhood is nervous about Russia. And that's sort of the nature of international politics. When one country acts out, it causes the others to be scared, and they respond in kind. So I don't see NATO expansion, but I do see the countries that are in NATO, that are in Eastern Europe, will press NATO for greater support.
All right, Mr. Billington, you have just 1 minute. What do you make of the role of NATO? Can there be peace within Ukraine and in the region as long as NATO continues with its policies?
No, there cannot. There has to be collaboration between the East and the West around Eurasian development. And in fact, the NATO chief, an American, has just announced a massive increase of U.S. Weaponry into the Baltics, into Poland, into Romania. There is a clear, and the reinforcement of their anti-ballistic missile systems, which the Russians correctly see as a weapon system which would create the potential for a first strike. These have to be reversed. We are sitting on the brink of global thermonuclear war. Anything less than that in people's minds at this point is completely oblivious to the danger that the world is in. It can be solved, but it's going to have to be solved as a whole, not by allowing the isolation of a single problem around Ukraine or even around Europe. This is global, and it's going to require that kind of transformation.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there for now. That was Mike Billington with the Executive Intelligence Review, joining us from Washington, and joining us from Boston was Jim Walsh, Research Associate with MIT. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your participation in this edition of The Debate. From me and the entire team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.